This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning, Bucknutters. Welcome to the Bucknuts Morning Five here on Monday, November 29th, 2021. I am Dave Biddle. I am joined by Steve Hellwagon. Steve and I are going to answer some tough questions on today's show, at least try to answer some tough questions, picking up the pieces here 2 days after Ohio State's terrible performance in Ann Arbor, losing to the Maize and Blue 42-27, got dominated and, you know, it's so disappointing that they lost the battle in the trenches on both sides of the ball, Steve. I want to start with the defense. I want to push this forward and kind of you and I can kind of sit here and give our opinions on what Ryan Day needs to do to fix the defense and some other issues. Let's start with the defense. I am of the opinion he needs to do what he did when he took over this program and not maybe clean house completely, but gut it pretty good, bring in some fresh faces, find his Jeff Hafley, just like Michigan did with Mike McDonald. Bring a defensive coordinator in from the outside. Find your new Jeff Hafley. What do you think Ryan Day needs to do with this defense?
Oh, I agree 100%. I think that they need a reboot. And, you know, the issues are two or threefold. I think we could talk coaching all we want. And you could have Buddy Ryan in the Bear defense or whatever. But if you don't have the personnel to execute whatever it is you're trying to do defensively, it's never going to work. So I think the first issue is personnel on defense. You didn't have, is one of Urban's favorite things, in a talent-equated game, you didn't have the people to stand up and make plays at any of the front seven positions on defense. You don't have a first-team All-Big Ten player in the front seven, maybe Haskell Garrett. That's it. And that's a problem. You don't match up physically. You don't match up playmaking-wise. And that goes back to recruiting. They have not recruited well on defense. Yes, they got JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer, but that's a Band-Aid. Those guys are freshmen. I honestly think they need to go into the transfer portal and go find legitimate starting players at defensive tackle, defensive end, and linebacker, or you're going to look at the same thing a year from now, Dave, because you don't have talent in the front seven that can help you win a talent-equated game. And that was what they were in. So that, to me, that's the first problem. You got shoved off the line of scrimmage. You got beat physically. And really, the problems that we had seen week in and week out, came home to roost, finally. I think in the secondary, you're probably going to be okay because they have recruited some good players back there. Denzel Burke had played outstanding up until Saturday, gave up two big plays and a pass interference penalty. But to me, the issues, I think in addition to addressing the coaching problems, he's got to go into the transfer portal and go get impact players, or you're going to have the same problem next year because Garrett's gone. Harrison and Smith, they could go, but if they go or don't go, you know, were they even on the field Saturday? The best thing Tyreek Smith did was flip off the Michigan players in the tunnel at halftime. So, I don't know. I didn't see any difference makers. When your best linebacker was recruited as a running back, that's an indictment of all of them, in my opinion. So you got to improve the personnel one way or the other. And they've got two good linebackers coming in with Powers and Hicks. My question is, either of them ready to go in and be a Katzenmoyer type guy the first year and come in and play? Because that's what they need. And so, to me, that's part of this problem. You want to ask about coaching. He's going to have to make a value decision on each of those coaches. One, to retain them, and two, into what role. He's got to go find somebody who can defend the power and the spread in this modern era of college football, because within the Big Ten, you see Purdue one week, and then you see what Michigan and Wisconsin try to do the next week. So you've got to be able to defend it all, or you can't win the Big Ten. So to me, and there's going to be plenty of people out there that fit those capabilities who would more than gladly accept $1.5 million to come in and call this defense. So exactly. He's got to go find somebody. He and Gene Smith need to sit down and have some hard conversations, because this wasn't acceptable, the final outcome. And he needs to make a value decision. Is Kerry Combs worth keeping for his recruiting? Question. Is Matt Barnes worth keeping for whatever he brought to the table? Larry Johnson, Sacred Cow, is he worth keeping? Al Washington, we've waited. Now he's got two good linebackers finally on the hoof coming in. Do you let him coach those two guys he recruited, or do you go in a new direction there? So, to me, you got some tough questions. I think at least one of them's got to go, because you got to bring somebody in. So, that's my long and short of it, Dave. I think it's a two-part thing. And then the third thing is, you got to look at scheme. Somebody on our message board said, are we still in nickel? Which I kind of got a kick out of that. Craig Young started at the bullet, and Hickman started at the two high safety. And did Young make any plays? I think that's something that's got to be evaluated. Having him out there, was that better than having whoever the possible third linebacker would have been? I don't know. But obviously the second half, Dave, I think they ran 22 running plays to just 4 or 5, 6 passes. It was obvious they were jamming the ball down Ohio State's throat. You needed more physicality out there. I'm not sure Young was the guy in those situations. So
it's 3 and 2. It's 3rd and 2, and Ohio State's defense is out there in nickel. I mean, yeah. It's ridiculous. They're out there in the 4-2-5. You know, this goes into my next thing, Steve.
Go ahead.
They're soft. They look like a Big 12 team. And listen, on offense, if you want to look like a Big 12 team, you know, okay, that's fine. But then you're going to have issues in the red zone, so it's really not fine. And Ohio State has issues in the red zone because they're not tough enough. And then, but the biggest issue, though, is on defense. I mean, now the offense has its issues too. Just like I said, red zone, I just don't see enough toughness on the offensive line. But this defense looks like a Big 12 defense. They're soft. They don't look anything like an Ohio State defense. It's just so disappointing. They look soft on both sides of the ball.
I think Matt Barnes made some good decisions on bringing blitz pressure. I was watching the game through my binoculars to see if anybody was getting home, and I never saw the blitz get home. I kept saying to our guy, Pat Murphy, sitting next to me, okay, blitz coming, picked up. And that allowed McNamara the time he needed to get the ball out. He was getting the ball out pretty quick anyway, but you know, you're right in terms of the physicality. It just wasn't there. They had 0 tackles for loss, Dave. 0. They never once tackled anybody behind the line of scrimmage. Maybe there were some no gains, but there weren't many of those. I was watching the running game, particularly on those 3rd and short situations, and maybe they needed 2. They got 6 or 8, and it was not even a question. They were getting the guy to the line of scrimmage and beyond without being touched, and that can't happen. Your defensive tackles need to get a hand on him, hold him up, and then everybody else converges. So that's an issue. And then, of course, the Oregon problem reared its head again. They got outside how many times? For at least 2 touchdowns. The Henning touchdown on the end around. Nobody stayed home. Nobody set the edge. I mean, as soon as he took the handoff, I'm watching it in the tight view through the binoculars. And Pat says in my ear, touchdown. he's still at the 15 yard line, Dave. And Pat says, touchdown. I'm like, oh dear. And then as I pan down, there's nobody there. And he's got a convoy in front of him. I mean, we've got a big old convoy running all through the night. I mean, it was just one play after another. And I don't know. They have got some major problems. I think they've got to go out and get three legitimate defensive players, not an EA Adeyote who might play six plays all year. You got to go find somebody who has started at Auburn or somebody who has started at Texas A&M or somebody who has started at Kentucky or somewhere. That
Elias Ricks, how about that? That'd be a good one. Elias,
yeah,
Ricks.
But he's been banged up.
I know he's
been
DB,
banged up too. Yeah, I'm thinking more
linebackers.
Front seven.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
You got youth and depth in the secondary. You got your Johnsons and your Hancock and your Turrentine.
Denzel Burke. Yeah.
Denzel Burke. I mean, you got guys back there. Explain to me why Court Williams was discussed as the hardest working guy here at 8 a.m, here at 8 o'clock at night, and he can't get on the field. And the guys that they're playing are on the field. I don't understand it. I don't get it. And the guys that they're putting on the field don't make an impact. That's the problem. And so is he really the hardest working player? Is he really a good player? Is he not a good player? You know, we've already seen one guy transfer, Jack Miller. Will there be more? That's another question. That should free up some scholarships. I would think if you guys are going to transfer, that'll free up some scholarships and they can go find, they got to really dig in and do some research and figure out if somebody is looking for an upgrade to a national championship team after playing on a 500 team for 3 or 4 years, kind of like Jonah Jackson that fell in their lap from Rutgers.
Yes.
That's the kind of transfer they need on defense. And they only need about four of them. I say with a chuckle and a laugh. They need two defensive linemen and two linebackers. Go.
Just look at that year, too. I mean, like, all they needed was, you know, a Heisman Trophy candidate quarterback and a really good offensive lineman. They got Justin Fields and Jonah Jackson that year. That caliber of player. Obviously, they don't need a quarterback. C.J. Stroud was just fine, even though he was under the weather. I want to talk about that a little bit because now I'm going to preface this with there are no excuses. Michigan kicked Ohio State's ass. But, you know, I've heard people bring up that this was a perfect storm for Michigan and this and that. I get that a little bit, both figuratively and literally, it was a perfect storm. I do think the fact that it was snowing hurt Ohio State. You saw Olave drop that touchdown. He's had a couple of drops this year, but I do think that affected Ohio State. I do think the weather, you know, then they had guys that were under the weather. C.J. Stroud was battling flu all week. You know, I had a parent tell me that, guys were throwing up. The night before the game, two nights before the game. So that's a real thing. It was at Michigan's place. But, man, throw all that out. I mean, even when the weather got a little better in the second half, Michigan just turned it up even more. Michigan wanted it more. And, yeah, I mean, maybe it's also the law of averages. Eventually, you know, Michigan, Ohio State wasn't going to beat them every year forever, even though I kind of wanted them to beat them every year forever. But, you know, address some of those things. Did it feel like kind of a perfect storm for Michigan this year?
I think it played a part in it, and I think that Michigan actually gives Ohio State a blueprint here because Jim Harbaugh rebooted his coaching staff. All of his assistants are between 34 and 44 years old. So he has gone away from the Greg Madison example, which I know Madison left him several years ago and came to Ohio State, but he is no longer looking for that guy with 40 years experience. He went out and got some fresh blood that came in and pumped some life into his program, basically, with new ideas and enthusiasm and energy. So, back on our first part about what kind of staff changes that Ryan Day might institute, I think that would be something that he might consider. I mean, you got to have competent people. First of all, that's the biggest thing. You got to have people who can recruit. You got to have people who can develop, and you got to have people who can scheme. So it's a multifaceted job being an assistant coach. And so to me, I think their way of looking at things changed. And I think that their approach to the game change and that worked in their favor. Go back to the Drew Brees example 20 years ago. They had the best team in the Big Ten at Purdue, but they went up to Michigan State in November and lost the game to a terrible Michigan State team because the weather was terrible and they couldn't throw the ball over the lot. Now, obviously, in my opinion, I think C.J. Stroud stood on his head. I thought he played outstanding. And he had to overcome the absolutely abysmal play of his offensive line and some very questionable play calling at times as well. I put in my first look column at least four plays, maybe five, that the plays were called. They attempted to execute them, and when it's over, you just scratched your head and said, I can't believe they just decided to do this in this situation. They went with a direct snap on second and 10 from the 20-yard line to Travion Henderson. That I'm confused what they thought that was going to, and he ran it to the short side. He faked a toss to C.J. Stroud, who's never run the ball yet. I'm just scratching my head. Third and five at the 10-yard line, or second and five at the 10-yard line, they ran the ball with Mayan Williams for a yard. That made no sense. So it was the whole thing, just a lot of things happened that didn't make any sense. Three running plays to start the second half. But again, your play calling, even if you had, you know, I don't know who the greatest offensive play caller of all time is. I use Buddy Ryan on defense, insert that name. Even he doesn't have plays to make up for second and 20 and, you know, third and 17, which your offensive line put you in those holes because of how many false start penalties and a couple five, holding penalties.
Five false snap penalties. Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
And the biggest game of the year, they failed the final exam and couldn't block Hutchinson. Ojabo got through for one late. One of the holding penalties on Petit Frere wasn't a very good call. I think Ojabo, it's pretty obvious he slipped on the wet turf and went down, and it wasn't like he grabbed him and drove him into the ground or anything. He just touched him on his way by, you know, and the guy slipped. The job of those defensive ends is to get at an angle coming around where you can leverage your way around. Well, he was off kilter on his own. His angle was off. You know what I mean? He had taken a bad angle and he slipped on his own. And so, you know, the officials bought it. Ohio State couldn't buy a holding penalty at the other end. On the other side, couldn't buy a holding penalty. Lathan Ransom got tackled on one of those outside runs. No call. You know what I mean? So, you know, that factors into it. But over the course of a 120-play game or how many plays it was, you know, the calls are going to even out and these kind of things. You can't make those kind of mistakes. And so, to me, Stroud, to have the team in position at the end of the game to overcome a lot of the issues, I thought he and the receivers just played an amazing game. So, you know, another amazing game. They put up the same stats they put up every week, basically. It just wasn't enough to overcome how bad the defense was, how bad the offensive line was, how bad the play calling was.
Plenty of blame to go around, even special teams. I don't know what they're doing on special teams. I know Emeka Ibuka has been banged up, or maybe he was under the weather, one of the two. In fact, I think he was under the weather. But still, Julian Fleming starts off the Michigan State game, losing the ball in the sun, muffing a kickoff. Starts off the Michigan game, so the Buckeyes get the ball at the 4-yard line because he muffs, doesn't muff it, just can't, doesn't get up to even make a fair catch. And then they leave him back there. I mean, the coaching was bad. The play on the field was bad. It's so disappointing that Michigan was clearly the better team and clearly the better coach team. It's mind-boggling to me. All right, last thing, I'll get you out of here. I have a tough time caring about the bowl game, whatever's going to happen with the bowl game. I'm sure when it rolls around, I'll care. Give me a prediction. Do you think it's going to be the Rose Bowl, the winner of Utah, Oregon? Do you think it's going to be the Rose Bowl? Where are the Buckeyes headed for bowl season, Steve?
It hinges on what happens with Michigan and Iowa, obviously. If Michigan goes on and wins this game, as people predict, then Michigan would be in the playoff and the Rose Bowl would take the highest ranked Big Ten team. They don't make a selection. They look at the committee ranks the teams, and then they take the highest ranked team, which would be obviously Ohio State, ahead of a 3-loss Iowa, a 4-loss Wisconsin. A 2-loss Ohio State would certainly be the highest ranked Big Ten team. So if Michigan wins, it's the Rose Bowl against the winner of the Utah-Oregon game, which will be played Friday night. So OSU fans will want to tune in and watch that. You could either get your revenge against Oregon or beat a Utah team that beat Oregon twice. So take your pick on that. I know Utah doesn't evoke much emotion. I think there might be some to avenge the loss to Oregon. I think one of the things you have to think about is if anybody's going to sit out this game. I don't think there's any ready-made pros on this team other than Olave and Wilson, who are going to be first-round picks. I don't think anybody else has made their bed here. You know what I mean? I think, you know, they could go out and play one more very good football game to prove their worth to the NFL. I don't think anybody can just rest on their laurels, if you understand what I'm saying, and not play in the bowl game. I mean, they might, to not risk injury, or if they've got a nagging injury and don't want to exacerbate it, maybe they would sit out at that point. But I don't think anybody is a top 15 pick to where they're just going to say, oh, I don't need to play in this bowl game. You know, it's been fun. Thank you to the Brotherhood. I don't think we're to that point with anybody. If they are, they're deluding themselves, because I don't see anybody outside of those two receivers who's going in the first round. So that's the first thing. If somehow Iowa beats Michigan, and Iowa played a terrible game on Friday against Nebraska, and Nebraska just gave that game to them. We were listening on our way to Michigan, and it was, I see your block punt and I raise you a turnover in the red zone. You know, it was one terrible mistake after another. And you could see Lucy Van Pelt pulling the football away from Charlie Brown, you know, one frame at a time, basically. And you knew it was coming that Iowa was going to win that game. I'm not sure Iowa has a good enough team to beat Michigan, particularly with the backup quarterback, Padilla, Petras. I'm not sure it matters who plays quarterback for them. But if by some chance Michigan has shot its entire wad and has nothing left to give and somehow loses that game, Michigan is still in the New Year's Six. Ohio State's in the New Year's Six, and Iowa's in the Rose Bowl. But the problem is the Orange Bowl and the Cotton Bowl are the playoffs. The Sugar Bowl is a contracted game. Only SEC and Big 12 teams can play there in the off years when they're not hosting the playoff. And the Rose Bowl would be taken by Iowa, so that just leaves two bowls, the Fiesta Bowl and the Peach Bowl. Ohio State would go to one and Michigan would go to the other, and I have no clue. I would hope after 27 Fiesta Bowls in the last 15 years, Ohio State would go to the Peach Bowl. Not that Atlanta in January is going to be great weather or, you know, anything to get too excited about, you know, but maybe that would be the destination. So, and no idea who they'd play. I mean, Notre Dame would be lurking out there if they don't get jumped into the playoff. So I think their path to the playoff is if Baylor somehow beats Oklahoma State, or if Houston somehow beats Cincinnati, that would open up a spot for Notre Dame, I would think. But otherwise, you know, you're probably in one of those other games, you'd be playing Notre Dame potentially.
Good stuff from Steve Hellwagon. I appreciate it, Steve. Thank you to all the listeners out there for tuning in to the show. We appreciate that as well. Hope everyone has a great day. Let's hear that Buckeye swag, best damn band in the land.
CBS Monday.
NCIS. Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island that got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday starting at 9/8 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.